Okay, we're going to be looking at forgiveness. So I'm going to call up that first slide. Here we go. Part three. So for those of us who've been over the past few weeks, we've been in Matthew 18, and then we're in Matthew 18, and we're still in Matthew 18. And some of you are wondering, isn't Matthew 19 worth reading? And I'm sure it is, and we'll get there. That didn't work, so I'll just ask you to do it. Is it plugged in? Okay. Thanks. The first time I spoke about Matthew 18, I was talking about membership. I said membership of a church is not the primary goal, but discipleship is. And the two statements I used were that the mission of God's people is to alert everyone to the universal reign of God through Christ. That's what we're about. That's what we exist to do. We're here to point out to people there is a living God. He exists. He's got a purpose. And we understand him, not only individually, but corporately. And we're here to highlight it and go, ooh, listen, look, here he is. The second phrase which I love is, worship turns out to be the dangerous act of waking up to God and to the purposes of God in the world, and then living lives that actually show it. And if you wonder what being a follower of Christ is, what a Christian is, that's what it is about. Worshipping God, showing his purposes in the world, and then demonstrating it. So those are the first two things I spoke about. Last week, I was talking about the relationship between a repentant heart, a forgiving spirit, and the humility of accountability to a body of believers, which is why in Matthew 18, in the bit we haven't read today, it's saying about hold each other, and when people aren't following Christ, go and challenge them. When they aren't following what you're saying, bring somebody else. When they're not following that, bring the whole body of believers. So you want to see people demonstrating a repentant heart. You want to be showing people a forgiving spirit. And finally, a humility of accountability. But there's one more crack I want to have a go at. And so we just move to the next slide. So this comes in five sections. We'll start with the first one. And at the end of these five things, I'm just going to leave that up for the rest of it so you can go back over what I'm trying to get to you. The first one is this. Failing to forgive hurts you. Okay? Now, we can read about it, and we can read this bit which says, God's heart says, if you don't forgive, then I'm not forgiving you, and all these sorts of things. But really, what it comes down to is, the first thing, if you fail to forgive people as a believer in Jesus Christ, the person it hurts most is you. And I want you to consider all of these things as we go through this, because ultimately it's a challenge to each of us as believers. And this is all the challenge to say, let's take a heart of forgiveness. So the next one is the key bit. In the ideal situation, someone's going to come up to you and says, brother, you know, I did X, Y, or Z against you. I realize now that that was a sinful thing. Would you please forgive me? And they do so in such a way that it's in humbleness, that you can understand that it's a true repentant heart, all these sorts of things. And you'll be able to, in the spirit of the Lord and with the right timing, say, yes, brother, yes, sister, I forgive you. That is the ultimate way of seeing a reconciliation. That's the ultimate way of seeing relationships restored. But the reality of the factor is there's going to be various examples where you're never going to see that happen. And the first one is this. There's going to be people, sadly, who have hurt you, who have passed on. They're never going to have the ability to come to you and say, hey, I realized I was wrong. They're dead. It doesn't mean that their sin against you is any less powerful. Their sin against you is any less hurtful. So sometimes you're just not going to get that sense of people coming towards you because obviously, physically, the people are no longer with us. The second group of people who you're going to have who have hurt you are those who've done so, and the things they've done to you have been so physically damaging, so physically dangerous, that it would not only be unlikely but also inappropriate for them to come and say to you face to face, would you forgive me? Even if they were going to do it, it's not the right forum. It could be abusive marriages. It could be sexual abuse. There's many different situations where reconciliation between two people just isn't going to take place, nor should it necessarily, because the person who's been hurt, who's been sinned against, is in such trauma that it's not appropriate to face off against the person who caused it. I want to say that this is okay. You still can forgive them. I'm not saying it's easy, by the way. But what I am saying is, if we don't, it will only hurt us. And then the third, and the one most likely we're going to come across, and of course, that one, arrogance, ties in with the first two, is you're always going to come across somebody who basically will never ask for forgiveness, because either they don't know they've sinned, or they don't believe they've sinned, or most likely, they don't care. And so we come back to this position where Peter asks the questions, well, how many times should I forgive a person? And Jesus gives this statement which says, you know, 7 times 77 and keep going and keep going and keep going. And so it reminds us that there's going to be certain circumstances where we need to forgive people even though they've never come and asked for it. But upon saying that, I'll come to the third point now. The third point is, if we offer forgiveness to people, it does not equate automatically to trust. And this is one of the key things I want us to get across, because sometimes we get this idea, and I've seen it in, sadly, in certain marriages where the husband goes and does something inappropriate. Sexual immorality. And the wife comes and speaks to me and says, person X has just done something wrong, and I go and speak to them, we have this solution, and the husband comes and says, please forgive me, which is great, and the wife, with great graciousness and God's blessing, says, yes, I forgive you, and the husband goes, okay, cool, no problems, completely failing to realize that that sinful situation has broken trust. Completely failing to realize that they need to re-establish the trust that they have broken. Now that's one simple example, but sin breaks trust. And so if I choose to forgive you because of something that you've done where you sinned against me and you broke trust, the fact that I have forgiven you does not say I trust you. That's okay. Which is why we can forgive people and we don't have to go that point which says, I automatically trust you. I'm not saying I won't ever trust you. It depends on what people did. I want to say this clearly right now, just so people don't get the wrong idea. If people have so physically hurt you and abused you that you are so traumatized that you can't be around that person, I am not suggesting that you go and contact them and go back and face-to-face forgive them. I'm saying you can forgive them in your heart. You can forgive them before God. But I am not saying go and put yourself in a dangerous situation. And once again, I'll say this. I've said it many times before. If you're in a situation where you are being abused or anything like that, remove yourself from that. Because only from a place of safety can you hope to get any sort of healing, any sort of forgiving, any sort of reconciliation. We have to understand that. Do not stay in abusive situations. Don't listen to this rubbish about, you know, because it generally happens. I think it's like one in two call-outs from the police are to do with domestic violence. And so too often we find, and it tends to be women, too often we find that women are in a domestic situation where there's abuse going on. If you are that person or you know that person, tell them to get out and find safety. Do not stay. Okay? So I'm not saying when people have traumatized you that you should be going to them physically, but I am saying you'll be challenged to say, can I forgive that person? The fourth one is, stemming on from that, forgiveness doesn't automatically equate to relationship. Once again, trust, relationship. You don't automatically say, just because I forgive them, we're going to be best buddies again. Nah. Might never be. And that might be perfectly appropriate. That's okay. And the final one I want to leave up there is this. Forgiveness negates vengeance, not justice. And what I'm getting at there is, if I forgive you for the sin, what I'm doing is I'm releasing myself via God from what you've done to me. But unless you come before God yourself and ask for forgiveness before God, then all that's happened is I've passed off my vengeance and said, God, you'll deal with that. The person is not, oh, we've scrubbed that. They've still got this relationship between them and God, and if they've never asked for forgiveness, God will deal with that. Forgiveness negates my vengeance, not the justice of God. So I'm going to leave those up there, and let's go back over these sorts of things. Just to use an example. One person writes this. A traveller was making their way with a guide through the jungles of Burma. They came to a shallow, wide river and waded through to the other side. And when the traveller came out of the river, numerous leeches were on their torso and legs. Their first instinct was to grab and pull them off, but the guide stopped them, warning that to do so would leave tiny pieces of the leeches under the skin. Eventually, infection would set in. The best way to rid the body of the leeches, the guide advised, was to bathe in a warm balsam bath for several minutes. It would calm the leeches. Soon they released their hold on the man's body. Likewise, when I've been hurt by another person, I cannot simply yank the injury from myself and expect that all bitterness, malice, and emotion will be gone. Resentment still hides under the surface. The only way to become truly free of the offense and to forgive others is to bathe in the soothing bath of God's forgiveness. When I finally fathom the extent of God's love in Christ Jesus, forgiveness of others will follow. I realize when I talk about forgiving people like this, it's challenging, it's confronting, it's upsetting. But we're called upon to do it because we are reminded that we too were forgiven. And so, in this particular parable of the unmerciful servant, we got the king coming and he forgives one, and then that guy doesn't go and pass it on down. But I'm actually now going to go to Luke chapter 7. So if you want to just dive with me into Luke chapter 7, for those of you in, it's 886 in our Bibles. I'm going to go to verse 36. Which is a variation on a theme. Luke chapter 7, verse 36. One of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. He went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. A woman in the town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair and kissed them and poured perfume on them. when the Pharisee who had invited himself saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of a woman she is. She is a sinner. Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. Two people owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii, the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven. You've judged correctly, Jesus said. Then he turned to the wall of the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven, little loves little. Then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. The other guests began to say amongst themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? And Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. The host, the Pharisee, and the woman who comes in, a denoted sinner, Jesus is making the point that both of them need sins forgiven. But unfortunately, the Pharisee has got to the point that even though they believe they've stood right before God because they've gone and done the sacrifices, they've done all these sorts of things, they have an unforgiving, unmerciful heart towards other people. And Jesus, demonstrating that he is a prophet, because he goes, I know exactly what you're thinking, and I'll prove it, makes this enormous statement of saying, I'm showing your lack of hospitality, your lack of welcoming me compared to her complete hospitality, your lack of humility compared to her humility, your lack of understanding what forgiveness is compared to her understanding that she has nothing to call upon to ask for that forgiveness, but she does anyway. I'm telling you, even though you've got great biblical knowledge, even though you're a Pharisee, even though you're a leader, even though you're the one in the supposed tribe who are meant to be representing me, you have an unforgiving heart. You need to understand who she is and see her as a person, and you too need to be forgiving of her. In this particular illustration, the danger we can become is that we end up being Pharisaical, which says, it's okay, I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, I'm forgiven, I've done the bit over here, I can take communion, I can take bread, but your sin's beyond the pale. Everything I did, well, that was okay, I can be forgiven, but not yours. Which brings us back to this. Failing to forgive hurts us. It first of all fails to demonstrate exactly what it means to be a believer in Jesus Christ. You see, a lot of people can acknowledge one act as wrong. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. But they fail to realize rebellion. But a person who's genuinely encountered Christ has realized we're not dealing with one act, second act, third, or whatever it might be. We're talking about a whole heart and attitude of rebellion towards the Creator God. Human sin begins with a loss of faith in God. Eve, and then through her, Adam, basically don't trust what God says, not interested. And so we have the first sin. See, relationship between moral beings is by confidence. And confidence rests upon the character, which is guaranteed by conduct. And what we're saying is, God is the ultimate character. God is the ultimate being who possesses all excellent qualities, holy qualities, moral qualities, is trustworthy. And we need to surrender ourselves and acknowledge that. And so if we do that, we've acknowledged that we were in rebellion and we've asked for forgiveness of that. But if we've asked for forgiveness, we need to be showing it. So one witty person once said, unforgiveness is like taking poison in the hopes that the other guy will die. Because unfortunately, that's what happens. You hurt yourself more than the other person. You hold on to it, and it turns into bitterness, and it starts to eat away. Ah, that person, they need to have be smited. And it starts to get down there. But another person says, to forgive is to set prisoners free and to discover that the prisoner was you. Now, I haven't got a big paper bag. I wish I did. But if I had a big paper bag over my head, not only would I stop walking around this stage and help people out because I'd trip over it, because I wouldn't be able to see what I'm doing. But imagine if you had a big paper bag over your head. This is what sin and lack of forgiveness does to you. It prevents you from seeing things around you. It constricts your view. But if you can forgive and take that paper bag off your head, it doesn't change the past. It's not going to stop those awful things having happened to you. But what it does is it now enlarges your view of the future. Forgiving people changes who you are and allows a different future to be ahead of you. It means no longer do you have to hold on to bitterness. No longer do you have to hold on to hatred. No longer do you have to be sitting there going, I just want God to smite that person. By forgiving them, you're allowing the hurt which has been attached to you to be disengaged. Forgiveness is an act. It's not an emotion. It will have emotional capabilities to it. It's going to be emotionally connected, but it's an act. Just like when you've had a deep injury, until you've pulled that item out, you can't heal. When someone's hurt you and you need to forgive them, you can't move forward in that until you've disconnected yourself from whatever it is they did. And the way to do that is through forgiveness. One definition of forgiveness is this: to grant free pardon or remission of an offense or debt, to give up all claim. And that's what I mean. If I forgive you, I'm giving up my claim to say I'm going to see any vengeance. But I am not giving up God's justice upon you. You still need to come before God and sort it out. I'm just pulling myself out of the equation by forgiving you. If you go, well, I couldn't care less, and I don't care God, you're still going to face the wrath and justice of God. Forgiveness comes as a gift from God. Matthew 7:2, for in the same way as you judge others, you'll be judged, and with the measure you use it, it will be measured to you. We just read in Matthew 18, this is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart. Matthew 11:25, when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive him, so that your Father in heaven may forgive you your sins. Paul writes in Colossians 3, bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another, forgive as the Lord forgave you. James records in James 2, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Forgiveness for a follower in Jesus Christ is not an optional extra. Mark Gunga writes this: "You're fooling yourself if you think you can remain bitter and unforgiving towards someone else and have that be okay with God. The Bible warns you not to deceive yourself." And I truly think this is one of the areas that people are full of self-deception. As Christians, one thing that is totally not negotiable for us is forgiveness. There are lots of things that are for us to decide that won't affect whether God forgives us or not. How much you pray, how much money you give to you, it's still your call. Whether or not you go to church, God's not going to send you to hell if you don't go every Sunday, even though you know maybe you should go. How much you read the Bible, once a month, 8 chapters a day, it's all up to you. There are all kinds of things we get to play with and have wiggle room on. But the one thing that is absolutely not up to you, not negotiable in any way, shape or form, is forgiveness. You cannot live in unforgiveness and think you are okay. Forgiveness actually effectively means in the Greek to release, to send off, to let go. Which is why I'm saying it's a decision, it's an act. It's to send away and say, I'm no longer going to allow that event that that person did upon me to prescribe my future. I'd like to say that if at the end of this sermon you choose to go and forgive someone tomorrow, as you wake up on Monday and are prompted by the Spirit and say, Lord, I forgive person X for what they did. I'd like to say on Tuesday, it's all taken care of and, you know, it's just easy, isn't it? But it's not. It's why it's an act. It's a choice to say, I'm not going to remember. It's a choice to say that on the Tuesday you say, Lord, I forgave them yesterday and I'm forgiving them today. And on Wednesday you go, Lord, I forgave them on Monday, I forgave them on Tuesday, I'm going to forgive them today. And this might carry on for a long, long time, until one day you'll wake up and you go, Lord, I forgave them on Monday, now it's Thursday, I forgive them today. And as time goes by, and as you've made that choice, you'll eventually realize that forgiveness has become part of you, and you're no longer recalling it, and you're distinctly choosing not to remember it. And so what you're doing is, by making that first step of saying, Lord, let me forgive this person, you're starting that process off, which God will walk alongside with you. I'm going to conclude with this statement from Claire Barton. She was the founder of the American Red Cross. She was reminded one day of a vicious deed that someone had done to her years before. But she acted as she'd never even heard of the incident. Don't you remember it? Her friend asked. No, replied Clara. I distinctly remember forgetting it. May God's Spirit be upon all of us, that we choose to walk a life of forgiving others, even when it's difficult to do so. Thank you.